Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Freed, and I'm joined, as always, by my man, Mike Luciano. Mike, the draft is over. It is officially May, which is kind of the quiet part of the NFL offseason, but it's been a wild few weeks. How you feeling, buddy?
Well, I'm sure Justin can share in this feeling. That was probably as taxing for a sports writer covering an NFL team. That's about as taxing a weekend as you'll see, barring one of your teams making the Super Bowl. And even then, probably just in terms of sheer volume of output, this might top that. So I'm glad to have that over with. I am not going to look at a single piece of college tape for a while, because I will do summer scouting, but I just can't keep – I need to rejoin public polite society, man.
It's a lot.
I just need to – I've been holed up for months and months and months making a big board that actually I will got to say this. I feel like I did okay in terms of projection this year. I had 26 of the 32 first rounders in my mock going in the first round. So not half bad, I got to say. I didn't call Michael Penix, but who could have? We'll get into the entirety of the Jets draft. Briefly, we'll touch on Olu Fashanu. We have a whole separate stream going that was right after it, going deep into the Fashanu pick and what we thought of it. And then we're going to recap all of the Jets picks. Plus, we're going to get into that whole John Franklin Myers trade to the Broncos. Maybe I saw this coming. Justin has some differing opinions. He is not as happy with it.
I saw it coming. That don't mean I'm happy about it. But
I'm more indifferent to it. This is kind of like a whatever move, in my opinion. But we'll get into that. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Google and Spotify and Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We are on all those sites. And right, YouTube at the Jet Press. That's where you can subscribe and like the stream. All those things are really big helps if you want to support the show. They do genuinely help a lot and mean a lot. So let's just dive into the draft chronologically, starting with Olu Fashanu at number 11. We've gone into Fashanu. We have 45 minutes basically entirely on Olu Fashanu, or Fashanu, I believe, is how it technically is.
Isn't it? I think it's Fashanu or something. Dane Brugler's pronunciation guide says Fashanu.
Fashanu, okay, because he said it differently than how I've been saying it after he did an introductory press conference.
Oh, we'll call him Olu.
Yeah, Olu, okay. That's much easier, especially considering his actual first name. That's Olumiya.
We'll call him Olu.
Number 74 on the Jets is what we'll call him, because that was his college number. Fashanu, Olu. I'm looking back at this pick, and in the immediate, I was a little more perturbed by it than most. Not some of the Jets fans who for some reason went full heel turn NWO and all of a sudden decided that they now hated offensive line depth after screaming for Justin literally years about inadequate offensive line depth. Now they get the best guy for that offensive line depth and all of a sudden they act like Joe Douglas just took Michael Penix and set the draft on fire. Revisiting it, I'm less confused, unless we should have taken Bowers than I was earlier, because I did think they addressed their weapons shortages, I think, pretty well, considering the ammunition they had. Like, if they didn't get a wide receiver in the third round, I would have been really confused with the Fashanu pick. Now I'm okay with it. I'm not happy about the fact that Tyron Smith is pretty much going to be a one-year thing, because you'd think you'd elevate Olu to the starting lineup after this year. Otherwise, we're in a Penix situation where we're going year by year with the left tackle, and it's like, well, when's the guy you picked really high going to play? So I don't want that. But it's hard to hate too much when you look at how decrepit and bad the offensive line was. No, Mekhi Becton just signed with the Eagles. I mean, what a perfect landing spot for Mekhi Becton, by the way. You couldn't get a better one. But he was a big part of just a horrendous offensive line last year, and any move that can be made to prevent that from happening – in a vacuum, you got to like. And they got a guy who's probably the best pass protector. You can make a case purely pass protection in the entire draft. Like, Alta's a better prospect. Joe Alta went number 5 to the Chargers. But just purely pass protection, technique wise, footwork wise, I mean, it's textbook, it's teach tape from Olu. So looking back on it, I still would have preferred, if I could just wave a magic wand and make anything happen, I would have preferred either Odunze or Bowers, but still firmly number three on the priority list was Olu, and they got him.
Yeah, you know, we touched on this last week when it was Friday when we were talking about the Fashanu pick, and I think it's very clear the Jets wanted Rome Odunze. Like, that was their guy. They wanted to trade up Premier League neighbors as well. They called the Giants. They called the Falcons about moving up to eight. They even called the Bears about moving up to nine. Side note, the Falcons, man, how dumb can you be? They nailed it because, by all accounts, no.
Do you think the Jets were going to get Penix? Like, I don't know.
No team was trading up to eight. Or like, if the Jets moved up to eight and the Falcons moved down to 10, by all accounts, no team's moving up to nine to draft Michael Penix, right? There were a couple teams that were apparently calling, but the Bears seemingly had no intentions of moving down. So what would be the issue with dropping the 10? There is no issue. You could drop the 10 and still get your guy. It's free draft capital. That's what the Jets did when they moved from 10 to 11 to allow the Vikings to move up and get J.J. McCarthy.
But I find it funny, too. They're always like, well, you only get 2 years of Kirk Cousins on the guaranteed money, and then Penix plays. Like, well, why just sign to a four-year contract then? Right. Well, those 2 years just not matter anymore?
Right. Now you're guaranteeing yourself that you're going to have dead cap, and it's just – it's an – and already Michael
Penix – either screwed up the Kirk Cousins contract after a month or right. The Penix rookie deal.
And, like, even if you're going to make that pick – we're not going to just shit on the Falcons here, but even if you're going to make that pick, you can do it at 10. It's the Dave Gettleman thing when he refused to trade down to when he took Barkley. Like, you are receiving a haul. You could have moved down and still gotten Barkley, and they just refused. The Falcons did the same thing. They Dave Gettleman did. But I digress. If the Jets had their way, they would have drafted Rome Odunze at eight, and it would have been great. I liked offensive line, and specifically Olu Fashanu in this case, more than Brock Bowers. I talked about that on Friday. If they weren't going to be able to get Odunze, if they weren't going to be able to get neighbors, offensive line made the most sense to me. I was in between Fashanu and Troy Faotano. I had them very similarly ranked for the Jets. I think Fashanu obviously has the higher upside than Faotano. He's a much better pass protector, you know, already, and he is more of a natural left tackle, and that is where you assume his home will be. I like the pick. I have no issue with it. As far as the Tyron Smith stuff, like, I think – we talked about this again on Friday. Going into the draft, this is what you had to do. You had to give yourself that increased flexibility, because if you didn't go into the draft with Tyron Smith and you're just like, all right, we're pigeonholing ourselves and we have to draft the left tackle here, that is not a good strategy. And sure, if the outcome is that you ended up with Fashanu, yeah, I guess it all works out in the end, but I have no issue with the Jets not hedging their bets on that and protecting themselves by signing Mike Williams so that they're not forced to draft the wide receiver, by signing Tyron Smith and trading for Morgan Moses so that they're not forced to draft the tackle. I think by far that was the best decision that they could have made. So going into the draft, they could trade up for Odunze if they wanted to. They could consider a Brock Bowers because they don't need a tackle. They don't need a wide receiver. In the end, they like Fashanu more than Bowers. I agree with them. I think Fashanu is probably going to play about the same as Brock Bowers would as a rookie. I'm just projecting and assuming that Tyron Smith gets hurt, because assuming he doesn't get hurt would be pretty silly. Obviously, we know Morgan Moses coming off the offseason shoulder surgery. Fashanu is going to play as a rookie, and if he doesn't, awesome. You're in a great spot anyway. So I like the pick. I got no issues with it. I think it's obviously a great pick for the long term. If they weren't going to be able to get Odunze or neighbors, this was my top choice.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I do find it funny, too, or at least interesting, not funny, that Douglas did pretty much say left tackle, left tackle, left tackle, and we're playing him at left tackle. It doesn't seem like there's any positional versatility moving around a right tackle thing. This is your left tackle of the future, so take that for what it's
worth. I wouldn't be surprised if he got reps. I know Fashanu talked about he's playing anywhere. I wouldn't be surprised if he got reps at right tackle. I don't think he's going to play guard. In fact, I know we talked about this on Friday. I've thought about it more. I don't want him playing guard. I don't want him playing guard. I'm okay with right tackle, but I really don't think you're maximizing his ability. And also, you're like, right tackle is very different than moving someone to guard. Like, that's a completely different position. So I wouldn't hate it if he got reps and potentially competed with Morgan Moses for the starting right tackle job. But I don't really want to see him at left guard, and I don't think the Jets will do that.
So let's just move on to the rest of the draft, one guy that the Jets were extremely high on throughout the entire draft. I mean, they sent that picture out on the social media account of no matter what, we're getting Malachi Corley, and they got Malachi Corley. Now, I will say this because we've had a guy in our Facebook chat, a guy named Gregory Freeman, who for 2 months, pretty much every episode has been saying they got to take Malachi Corley, and we're like, okay, sure. And they took him. So you know what? You win. You win, Gregory Freeman. You were right on the ball with that one. We've talked about Corley in the past. I like him as a prospect. I think he's a really good fit for the Jets too. But my question, of course, relates to how they're going to use him, because he is a very limited player in that he's more like a running back. I mean, he's 5'11", 215. Mm-hmm. They use him like Debo Samuel, where it's a lot of crossers, a lot of get the ball in his hands quick, a lot of going horizontally rather than vertically. And again, that how many times have people said, well, we're going to draft this guy and he'll be our Debo Samuel, and then he's not. Or they'll draft a fast guy. He'll be our Tyreek Hill, and then he's not. So I'm always worried about things like that. But just purely as a player, for a guy who's going to run a lot of crossers and stuff like that, because that's what Aaron Rodgers likes. A lot of crossers, a lot of over the middle, a lot of using your speed to get horizontal and then make plays after it. You can look back at Hackett's time in Green Bay. He had a lot of success with stuff like that. So this guy fits well. He could play in the slot. I've seen him outside at Western Kentucky, so you can move him around a little bit. Violent runner. I don't think he's going to run like he did in college football where he's just like plowing dudes over. Like, he can't do that against NFL linebackers and NFL defensive backs. So he'll get killed if he tries to do that. But still a strong runner, really good vision. I like his hands a lot too, like really nice. If you need him to go downfield too, he can. Like, he's shown pretty good catch radius, nice long arms. I don't think he'll ever be like a number one wide receiver in the NFL. I just don't think he will. But for what the Jets need right now from a receiver, considering what was available there, the two guys that I thought would have really fit in well were either Roman Wilson or Malachi Corley, considering who was available. And if you watch some videos the Jets put out, it seemed like those were the two guys they had their eyes on, were Malachi Corley and Roman Wilson. Corley, of course, won out. They get the trade done with Carolina, and they move up and they get their guy. So if they have that much conviction in it, I'm not going to shake my stick at Joe Douglas for saying, why didn't you draft receiver X or receiver Y? Seems like they loved him and they have a plan for him.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel too, because, you know, I also saw that. It definitely seemed like the Jets agreed that Malachi Corley and Roman Wilson were the top two guys on their board. If it were up to me, I would have loved Roman Wilson. I liked Roman Wilson more as a prospect. I thought he was more of a sure thing, quote unquote, than Malachi Corley. I think he's an easier player to project to the NFL because it's less about how you're going to use him. And it's like, oh, he's going to be an effective speed slot guy. Like, that, I know that about Roman Wilson. I'm pretty confident saying that. Whereas Malachi Corley, I think it's going to come down to a lot of how he's used and how he continues to develop at the NFL level, because he's clearly a dynamic electric playmaker. He's like, you know, he's the self-proclaimed yak king, whatever. Like, and that's true. Like, I think over the last 3 years, no player in college football had, like, he had 400 more yards of yak than any other player in college football over the last 3 years. That's ridiculous. Like, that's actually ridiculous. I think over the last 2 years combined, he's had like 1500 yards of yak or something over 2 years. A lot of players don't get that just yards overall in a 2 year span. He had that in yak alone. So obviously there's the upside there with him. It's going to just come down to how he can continue to diversify his route tree, because he was a very limited player in college. He did not run a very, very diverse route tree. You already talked about it a lot. A lot of horizontal stuff, a lot of screens, a lot of crossers over the middle, just plays to get the ball in his hands. And I think that's what the Jets are going to do early on with him. And I also think it's a really good fit with what they're looking for, because I think he complements Garrett Wilson and Mike Williams a lot, because Mike Williams obviously is, at his best, one of the better deep ball guys in the NFL in terms of his ball tracking skills and his ability to just go up and get it. He's awesome at that. Garrett Wilson, I don't think, is quite the same kind of like downfield threat. Obviously, he has the speed, but I like, you know, I think you could just use him obviously everywhere in the intermediate game a lot and the short game. But Malachi Corley is really your, I mean, I've seen people make the comparison. It's like, this is the prime Randall Cobb for Aaron Rodgers. That's what you're hoping you're getting out of Malachi Corley. Different types of players, but in terms of what value he can bring to the offense, I think that's what you're hoping to get in Malachi Corley. And it's just at this point, you know, how much can he continue to develop? And I'm glad you mentioned the vertical passing game too, because there is stuff that he did in college that makes me think, oh, he actually has the ability to do more. We just haven't really seen it to this point. And I think that makes me more confident in him than somebody like, I mean, you want to talk about a guy that the Packers drafted when Nathaniel Hackett was there that they were hoping would be the next Debo Samuel. Amari Rodgers. Like he obviously, Corley's a little bigger than Amari Rodgers, but that was a guy that they drafted. They're like, oh, he could be a super versatile offensive weapon for us. And he did absolutely nothing. He returned.
Amari Rodgers couldn't catch too. That was the other problem.
Right. He couldn't. He never found any role in offense, was a failed returner, and was out of the league in a few years. I don't think Malachi Corley is going to follow that same trajectory. I'm a lot higher on Malachi Corley as a prospect. I think there's a lot more. I think there's a higher floor with Corley. I don't think he's like your typical gadget guy. I think at the very least, he's going to have a role in the offense. Even if he does not continue to develop as a receiver, I think he's still going to have a role, which that's good. And clearly the Jets really liked him. I like the pick. It's not my favorite wide receiver that I wanted them to target on day two, but I like Malachi Corley. I think he fits in well with this offense, and I think specifically he fits in well with Aaron Rodgers, and I think he's going to do well with the Jets.
The thing about Corley, too, that I like having is the Jets are now so stylistic. Like you mentioned earlier, they're so stylistically different.
Yeah.
With all their wide receivers. Because they now have an underneath guy, they got an intermediate guy, third down chain mover, Garrett Wilson, and then they get the deep threat,
yep,
Mike Williams. The concern about, well, he only did this in college, this being, flats and crossers and a very limited route tree. I guess the chicken or the egg, the big question is, well, is that just Western Kentucky's fault for not knowing what they had and not using him properly? Or did they know what they had and they realized he's not good in those areas and that's only what he's good at? And they just spam it over and over again because it's college and you can do that. That's the question that will determine how good Malachi Corley is. Because if he has the talent and he was just being used not to his full potential, then the Jets got a huge steal here.
That's the Justin Herbert debate. That's what the Justin Herbert debate was coming out of Oregon. Justin Herbert, if Oregon actually used him to his fullest potential, he would have been the first overall pick. But they didn't, and everyone was being like, oh, why is he only throwing these little flat routes and why is he such a limited quarterback? Is it because he can't do it? No, it was just because the coaching staff was bad. That's the question with Malachi Corley. Is it because he can't do these things? I've seen a little bit on tape that says, all right, maybe he can, but obviously – it's a different game playing in the NFL. I think he's definitely going to need to work on the nuances of being a route runner, which again,
Western Kentucky too. It'd be one thing if he was at Georgia or Alabama and you're like, he's playing pros. Like, he's not playing pros all the time.
It was against Ohio State, right? He went for 8 for 88. I think it was 8 catches for 88 yards.
That kind of put him on the map, was that game.
Right. So he's shown he could do it at that level. Now, again, a lot of that game was, I'm pretty sure, almost all those yards were after the catch. I don't think he was doing much down the field, but still.
And they're getting blown out, so it was a lot of soft coverage.
But still, he's shown that at least his athleticism and his physical makeup can stand toe-to-toe with some of the best players in college football. I think the Deebo-Samuel comparisons are a little much. I know it's the easy and obvious comparison. I don't think he's quite as big or fast as Deebo, which is part of what makes Deebo-Samuel so great. Obviously you still see that same yak ability. I threw out a thing on Twitter and I just want to repeat it here because I think it's really funny. He is the Marshawn Lynch of Jarvis Landry's. That's what I would say
about Landry. Wasn't as fast.
No, he wasn't. I'm talking about a guy who can be a high volume slot receiver in the NFL. That's what I'm talking about.
No, you know what he is? I got it.
What is he?
He's if Cordarrelle Patterson actually worked. If he stuck at receiver in Minnesota, if he just stuck at receiver and worked there.
To be fair, Malachi Corley hasn't worked yet either. So we'll see. Maybe he is just Cordarrelle Patterson. I don't think he's going to be the return man that Cordarrelle Patterson was. Although I would not be surprised if the Jets use him there at all, just because of the new kickoff return rules. I think he'd be really good for that.
So let's move on to their fourth round pick and their sixth round pick. We'll kind of lump them together because they took two of the same position and they double up at a spot that I don't think a lot of fans had them doubling up at, and that's a running back. Joe Douglas has now drafted a running back every single year that he's been the GM of the Jets. Some hits, some misses, but the Jets take Braylon Allen from Wisconsin in the fourth round and a pick that I called, I guess, because I had Isaiah Davis to the Jets in the sixth round, not with that same pick number, but you got to give me some credit there. That's pretty cool, in my opinion.
You got it.
And we'll start with Allen first because Davis, to me, let's just start with Davis first, in my opinion, and I'll get him out of the way because he just seems to me like he was the best player available to pick. Yeah. And in the sixth round, people are crying about him. They're just taking BPAs at that point. They're not drafting for need with a sixth round pick. And I do like what Isaiah Davis brings to the table. We mentioned it before, a little bit of a plodding runner. And again, FCS at South Dakota State to the NFL, big transition, but powerful one cut guy, lowers his shoulder, a lot to like it as a short yardage RB3. Mm-hmm. I think he's a little too patient sometimes, but when he hits the hole, he hits the hole. So
yeah,
good player. I think he'll be a solid pro, probably a special teams guy too. I think he's got some value there, like on coverage stuff, not as like a returner necessarily, but he'll last on this team. I think they have a role for him. Allen, on the other hand, I think he'll play so much. He might play more than Olu in his rookie year. Because I think right now he's RB2 on the Jets, because I don't think the Jets want to use Breece Hall as a runner and a receiver to the degree they used him last year and get him like 30 touches a game. That'll just wear him down. They wanted a nice RB2.
And you don't need to now because you have other skill players, hopefully, that could step up. Mike Williams, Malachi Corley.
But even with that, Hackett likes splitting up carries. He's always done that throughout his career. Even when he was successful, quote-unquote successful, he's always split running backs with Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon in Green Bay. And I've seen everybody's comparing Braylon Allen to A.J. Dillon. That's the easy comparison because he's so big. I mean, he's 6'2", 238. He's actually only 20 years old. He started in college when he was 17.
Dude,
he graduated from high school early.
Yeah, he's so young.
We have not seen the best of Braylon Allen yet. And this dude's already huge, and he's fast for his size. 6'2", 238. And when he gets running, man, he gets running. He's tough to bring down. The thing I like about Allen, too, is he's got pretty light feet for a guy that big. Pretty choppy, nice jukes, doesn't go down easy either, and he's a great pass protector, maybe the best pass-protecting running back. And he's good value. I had him as like a borderline top 100 player in my RB5 or 6, I can't remember which. He was like in that range, and they got good value for him. And he'll be a nice complement to Breece Hall. Even though Breece Hall's big, Breece Hall's a speed guy. Braylon Allen is not. He is a, I'm going this way, you're going this way, let's see who wins kind of runner, and I like guys like that. The concern, though, sometimes, I saw a tweet about this when Bucky Irving got picked, because I thought Bucky Irving, who was like 5'11", 190, he got picked by Tampa Bay in the third round, or the fourth round, excuse me. I thought they were kind of very different players, because Bucky Irving's 5'11", 190. Someone said that Bucky runs like Braylon Allen should, and Braylon runs like Bucky Irving should, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Because Irving is 5'11", 190, and he runs like Marshawn Lynch, or he tries to. And Braylon is that big, and there's a lot of dancing and cutting and juking moves, and there's sometimes you want to be like, all right, dude, you're big. Remember that you're big. Mm. Sometimes you got to coax that out of him. The production dipped a lot from his best 2 years in Wisconsin, which was all I formation, run heavy behind Joe Tippmann, his teammate.
Right.
Here you go, Braylon, go run. Then they hired Phil Longo, who stinks as a coordinator. He's like an air raid spread offense guy. It was just totally the wrong fit for Braylon Allen. So I'm believing more in the first 2 years of Braylon Allen than what I saw last year. And again, he's only 20 years old. There's a lot of potential here still to be unearthed. So Davis, okay, is a BPA. Braylon Allen, I genuinely like the pick a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I was pretty vocal about Audric Estime being my favorite, like, big, powerful back for the Jets in the middle rounds of the draft. We didn't get to talk about Braylon Allen a lot going into the draft, but I mean, you talked about his age. Dude, he's going to be, when he plays a snap for the Jets, he's going to be the youngest player in Jets history when he plays a snap for the Jets. He doesn't turn 21 until January. The reason for that was because it was something where, like, in high school, he ended up, because the COVID year, like, it screwed everything up. So he took his junior and senior year classes all in 1 year. Like, he basically just did 2 years of school in one, to the point where his final season, he actually committed to Wisconsin at 16 years old. He was 16 when he committed to Wisconsin. His final year, because the like fall 2020 season got pushed to spring 2021. So he rushed for over 1,000 yards in college, or in high school, in spring 2021. And then the fall rushes for over 1,200 yards as the leading rusher in the Big Ten.
He was 18.
No, 17.
17.
He wasn't even 18 yet. This man was not a legal adult, and he was rushing for, he was the leading rusher in the Big Ten. That's insane. Like, that's,
and the best part was he was not getting recruited as a running back. He was getting recruited as a linebacker.
Yes.
And then he had to switch positions. So he's only done this with 3 years of full-time running back experience.
He got to Wisconsin as a linebacker, and then they switched him to running back because they needed the depth. And he was like, all right, sure, switch the running back. And then he not only earns the de facto starting job, because they had a rotation, but earns that job in his freshman season as a 17-year-old. But he leads the Big Ten in rushing with, what was it, 1,268 yards, 6.8 yards per carry. So, yeah, the upside is there. The potential is there for this guy to be a very, very good running back. I agree with you. I think he should be more aggressive. Like, he's not really, like, a true battering ram the way that he runs, and you'd think he would be for a guy that size, which, and then the other part of it is also there are some ball security issues. He had, I believe, 9 fumbles in college, including 4 last year. That's a concern, and that's part of what kept Izzy Abanikanda off the field as a rookie. It's not a concern with a guy like Isaiah Davis, who, you know, I really like Isaiah Davis, and I don't know if we got to talk about him a ton on the show before the draft, but of all those, like, you know, day three, specifically small school guys, because he's South Dakota State, I think he has genuine three-down potential. Like, I don't know if it's a great situation for him because I don't see that ceiling for him with the Jets because they have Breece Hall ahead of him, and obviously they brought in Braylon Allen as well. But if he went to a situation where, like, say he went to, like, Arizona, 100%, I could see him being a three-down running back in a year or two. Like, I truly believe he has the potential. You never know with day three running backs. A lot of times it's just so hard to project, especially a guy coming from South Dakota State. I think he still needs to offer a little bit more versatility in, like, passing situations. But it's, as far as, like, an early down runner goes, I think he's very good. I think both of them are good players. I like both of them better than Izzy Abanikanda. Right now, to me, and we were talking about this a lot throughout the year or throughout the offseason, people were like, oh, you know, they don't need a running back. They have Izzy Abanikanda. He's RB2. Guys, he wasn't good last year. Like, he was limited playing time. Absolutely barely, did not play very much, but there was also a reason for that. The Jets did not trust him in pass protection, and they did not trust him because he had ball security issues. And then when he did finally get an opportunity, he did nothing to show that he deserves more of an opportunity. So clearly the Jets were not particularly high on Izzy Abanikanda, and I think it's pretty evident that the selections of Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis, you know, they don't necessarily seal his fate. Like, I think Izzy Abanikanda could still have a role in his second season, and you want to talk about a guy who's also young. He was 20 years old going into his rookie season as well. So he's also very young. So there might still be some potential with him. But as far as skill sets and also, like, how they complement Breece Hall and how they fit, that's the other part of this. The Jets, I mean, it's not been confirmed, but it's all but been confirmed. They're switching their offensive scheme. They're not going to be a wide zone team. They're switching to more of a power runs gap scheme. And I don't think Izzy Abanikanda fits into that scheme very well. Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis absolutely are better fits in that scheme. So that give them, you know, that gives them a leg up over Abanikanda as well. So I'm not trying to write Izzy off, but I think that both Allen and Davis are better fits. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how the rest of the running back room kind of shapes up. Because we all expected them to sign a veteran at some point. And, you know, maybe they still can. Like, I'm not going to rule it out that they sign a Kareem Hunt or whatever. Obviously, if they did that, that would probably maybe be the end of Izzy Abanikanda, or, you know, it definitely would not bode well for him. But it seems more likely that they're just going to go into the season with 4 young running backs on a roster. And, you know, that's not the worst thing. Like, obviously, you have Breece Hall you can lean on. And if you're confident in Allen, Davis, and Abanikanda being able to handle any other reps behind him, I got no issue with it.
It's tough for Abanikanda. Boy, that's looking like a whiff for me. Adam is like a fringe top 100 play. That was a whiff last year.
The issue, and that's not to cut you off again, like, the issue is if you can't block and you have ball security issues, you're not going to see the field. Like, it does not matter how talented you are as a running back. Those, you need to have at least one of those two things to have a role on an NFL roster. And I mean, as a rookie, the Jets clearly didn't trust him with either of those things.
I mean, to be fair though, I mean, try being a, I know Breece Hall is just an otherworldly talent, but without otherworldly Breece Hall talent, you try being successful in last year's Jets offense as a running back.
Sure. Sure. But it's telling to me that for most of the year, they continue. Like, I'm not, this isn't me being like, oh, yeah, the offensive coaching staff is always making the right personnel decisions. But they continued to play Dalvin Cook over him, even when it was clear Dalvin Cook was cooked. Like, it was clear Cook was washed. And they made other changes. And eventually they gave Izzy a chance. Eventually, after Cook was gone, was released. But they really did not trust him at all. And there's usually something to that.
I'm really excited about Allen, though. I almost would not want to sign a veteran now because I think Allen could just lock down RB2.
Yeah, I don't think they need to.
You don't have the pass protection concerns. You have the power now. And, like, I think, like, again, I've said this before, people going, oh, AJ Dillon. AJ Dillon's not that fast.
Yeah.
Like, I kept watching Braylon Allen. Now, I know he has the fumble issues and all that, and I keep watching him, and I'm like, why is this guy not getting hype? Because he big program, runs the ball a lot. He's got the numbers. I'm like, there's got to be something that I'm missing. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't really find a ton of it. I mean, there are concerns, obviously. I think he's got kind of a choppy running style that I don't really love for a guy that big. But is that really enough to make him fall to the late fourth round? But I don't think anybody had him fall into the late fourth round that I saw.
Running back is also like, it, for me, it might be the hard, I mean, other than like line play, which like offensive line play is so hard to evaluate for like the average person, but I feel like running back play is so hard to evaluate because every time I watch a running back, I'm like, oh, this guy's really good. Like, it's rare that I watch a running back in college and I'm like, this guy stinks. Like, I feel like it's a very, very hard position to evaluate because there's so many external variables that go into play for a running back. Like, you know, you could end up with 2,000 yards and, you know, I mean, 2,000 yards might be a stretch, but you could end up with like 1,200 yards and be a fine running back. But, you know, maybe your offensive line is great. Maybe the talent around you is great. It's really difficult to evaluate running back play so much sometimes. But yeah, I really like Allen and I really like Davis. And I think whoever emerges, I'll throw Izzy in there too, because if he improves the pass protector, good for him. Whoever emerges as that pass protecting third down back that the Jets want, that's who's going to be their third down guy. Like, that's the role that they're trying to fill. And it's probably going to be an open competition. It's going to be whoever steps up and can fill that role. Because look, Breece Hall is a phenomenal running back. He's maybe a top two running back in the NFL. He's not amazing in pass protection. That's not his thing. And nor does it need to be, right? So if you get somebody like Allen or Davis or even Izzy stepping up and proving that they can handle that load as a pass protecting third down back who can also handle short yardage duties, that's what you want. That is the exact type of person and type of player that you want to complement Breece Hall.
Brian may have just nailed the player comparison where he says he's got the same profile as Deontay Foreman.
I like that.
Foreman goes down a little easier than Allen. He does, yeah, but then Braylon Allen specifically. Like, it's all about a mindset thing. If the Jets could just take it, if they could take Chris Ivory, maybe not that strong, but 80% of Chris Ivory's brain-damaged brain because of his hard-running style, and put that into Braylon Allen with his speed and his raw power. I mean, you've seen the videos. This guy is shredded. I mean, his thighs are like bigger than my waist, and he's a running back.
If they
just get that mindset into him, I think that he could legitimately be a starting back. Now, they don't need him to be because they have Breece Hall, but I think – and you could teach that, I think. Tony Dews, I mean, for crying out loud, Coach Derrick Henry. You don't get more power, aggressive running than Derrick Henry. Sure. So that's a good guy, I think, to work with him too.
Yeah.
Moving on, though Jets did draft a quarterback, which we thought they would do. Michael Pratt was still on the board. They did not pick Michael Pratt. He fell, by the way. That was surprising.
He did. Was it seventh round he got taken?
Seventh round of the Packers. That was surprising.
Quarterback drafting has just become, if you're not picked in the top 12, you're going day three. Like, that's what it's become at this point. Like,
well, to be fair, when was the last second or third round quarterback? Jalen Hurts, probably.
Jalen Hurts, Derek Carr.
I mean, Will Levis looks okay, but I don't know. Right.
But it's rare. Like, because if you really like a guy, you're going to trade up and try and get them as early as possible so that no one else can get him. That's kind of what it comes down to. Like, if you don't like a guy enough to take him in the first round, you probably don't like him enough to take him in the second or third.
And that's why Bo Nix went number 12. But
Rattler went in the fifth.
Yeah, because, well, that was weird. I saw those reports of like, oh, he the TV show and all that. I'm like, now I know why GMs get fired all the time if they're basing – franchise altering draft decisions on a reality show from when the kid was 17.
Well, did you see the anecdote about Bo Nix where it was like when the I think it was with Bo Nix, the Broncos met with him or whatever, and they asked him,
and he had all football stuff in his backpack.
It's like, sold, gotta draft this guy at 12.
It's like the JJ McCarthy scouting quotes. I'm like, I've heard like 10 quotes about JJ McCarthy. I haven't heard one thing about football,
right? Nothing about his ability. It's like, he's a high character leader, chip on his shoulder, all this shit. It's like, okay,
cool. He's a winner. What is that? You won in high school. Okay, you beat other high school kids,
right?
They had to go to algebra class, and then you played them. That doesn't count for me.
Speaking of that, you know who's a winner, Mike? Jordan Travis.
You know who's good? You know who's good in high school? Everybody. Because that's how you get to play in college. True. Who's bad in high school and then plays in college, for crying out loud? Fair. But anyway, Jordan Travis. The Jets took him in the fifth round, which I think is a sign that the league viewed him higher than most, because he went in the fifth round despite a serious leg injury that ended his career early at Florida State. The Jets have even said they don't know when he's going to be healthy for an indeterminate amount of time. Like, they just took a gamble on him, but they just don't know if he'll be ready for week one. But
just fine.
Luckily, he'll be QB3 behind Aaron Rodgers and Tyrod Taylor. So if everything, unless the most calamitous thing ever happens, read last year, because that was the most calamitous thing that could have happened. If last year happens again, then maybe Jordan Travis sees the field. Ideally, he's not going to see the field this year. And I don't think he'll be anything more than a long-term backup. Like, every time a quarterback gets picked, it's like, oh, long-term successor. It's like, fifth-round pick. He's not going to be the long-term successor. But he's definitely good enough to be an NFL backup for a very long time. because you get solid arm talent for a smaller guy. He's only like 6'1", 200, but he's got arm talent. Mm. He's got good pedigree. I remember his brother played in the MLB for the Blue Jays. Is that like he's got those sort of that sort of build about him?
Wait, isn't it like Ross Travis or something?
Devin Travis. He used to play second base for the Blue Jays.
Who's Ross Travis? Oh, that's an NFL player. Why do I know? He was with the Jets. Ross Travis was a tight end with the Jets. Anyway, sorry.
Anyway, Travis also brings like a good mindset that I like. Like I've often bemoaned how a lot of backup quarterbacks will be too check down heavy. And then they end up going 16 of 24 for 100 yards. I'm like, well, that's not how you win games. Mm. Travis will let it rip. Now, he had really good playmakers to have that happen because he had Keon Coleman, first pick of the second round with the Bills, Johnny Wilson, who slid for some reason, but he's really good, to the Eagles, and then even Jaheim Bell to the Patriots, three draftable targets, and then Trey Benson, running back, went to the Cardinals. So that was an NFL offense he was playing in pretty much. So I get that you're more willing to cut it loose when you get those guys out there, but you like to see that mindset. And again, the playmaking out of structure. I know that those sort of words have been tainted by Jets fans because that was the appeal of Sam Darnold and that was the appeal of Zach Wilson. But when you're that small, like you have to be, unless you just have an insane otherworldly arm, which he doesn't, it's a good arm, but not otherworldly, you have to be able to use your legs. Mm-hmm. And he can't. He's not a running quarterback in that that's his primary way to make plays, but he can if you need him to. And he did it for years and years at Florida State. Big program, big competition every single week. This is a really good pick, I think, for the Jets because now Tyrod Taylor's here for 2 years, but now he could potentially retire or go somewhere else. You got backup quarterback if you think he's that good. Like, they didn't draft him with the intention of him being QB3 forever. They think he could be a long-term backup. And I think he's got more than enough tools to make good on that.
I agree. Yeah, and we talked about it leading up to the draft that it seemed like – I think I made that prediction that the Jets would draft either Jordan Travis or Michael Pratt just because they bought both of them in for top 30 visits. They were very clear – or it was pretty clear that they were interested in them. Pratt seems like maybe it was more of a smokescreen. I don't know. Like, obviously, Travis they preferred because both of them were on the board and they took Jordan Travis. I think it ultimately comes down to – it seems to me like the Jets are prioritizing – playmakers in their quarterback room. I feel like even the undrafted guy that they signed, Pee Wee Jarrett, all four of their quarterbacks in their room. I know Rodgers and Tyrod Taylor are kind of, you know, obviously in the latter stages of their career, but they can still move and they can still create outside of the structure. And that is absolutely the appeal of every single quarterback in that room. That's long been one of Aaron Rodgers' greatest strengths is his ability to create outside of structure and extend plays. Tyrod Taylor, you know, at this stage of his career, isn't the player that he used to be with the Bills and earlier in his career when he was more mobile and more athletic, but he can absolutely still do that. And obviously Jordan Travis, we saw him do that a lot at Florida State. And then again,
I got so many Bills Tyrod vibes watching Jordan Travis.
Yeah. You know what I think part of it is too? Like, and Joe Douglas was part of the Eagles regime that drafted Jalen Hurts. Am I correct saying that?
Douglas? No, that was 2020 was Hurts.
It's 2020, so it was the year after. But either way, obviously, he still has some ties to the Eagles organization, Howie Roseman. I think if you squint really hard, you can see some Jalen Hurts in Jordan Travis. In terms of their, you know, I think both players have consistently gotten better every year in college. They've consistently taken another step. That was, you know, one of Jalen Hurts' greatest strengths is, you know, I mean, if you look back at his early Alabama tape, it's like,
oh, it's brutal,
right? It's like, how is this dude going to play in the NFL? Now he's, you know, I mean, he
benched him in the championship game for crying out loud.
There was, if you told me that dude was going to play in the NFL, not only play in the NFL, be an all pro quarterback in the NFL,
almost win the Super Bowl,
crazy, right? But he just continued to improve and he got better and better and better at Oklahoma. He got better. And then, of course, with the Eagles, he got better. I think you hope that Jordan Travis can have a similar type of trajectory. You know, I don't think he's not quite as big as Hurts. I don't think he's quite as talented, for lack of a better term, as Jalen Hurts. But in terms of like the mental makeup, scouts have raved about his leadership, his football IQ, his mental makeup, all of that stuff. And I think that's a very similar thing to what Jalen Hurts' scouting report was coming out of college. It was like, look, he may not be the most talented guy in the world, but he's going to work his absolute ass off and he's going to continue to try and get better. And I think you hope it's a similar trajectory with Jordan Travis. And of course, you have the playmaking ability there that you saw with Hurts as well. So I think, and you also mentioned it too, like for a guy who's as small as he is, solid arm, like an NFL caliber arm, not going to wow anybody. He's not Joe Milton out there, but he's got an NFL caliber arm, which is why I think he could play at this level. He's not Sam Hartman, you know, but he can play at the NFL level. He's got an NFL arm. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I like the pick. I'm happy with him as a potential developmental backup. Probably not going to be an Aaron Rodgers successor. You never know. I mean, you absolutely never know with quarterbacks. You know, Brock Purdy is a genuinely solid starting quarterback, and nobody ever saw that coming when he was coming out of Iowa State. So
you're only really had a sixth on Purdy, so I was higher than the rest. Maybe that counts.
You had like a fourth on Puka Nacua then. Good for you.
I actually was lower on Nacua than did most. Yeah.
Well, there you go. You can't claim that though. But yeah,
that one shocked me.
So. And even look, and not to say Sam Howell's anything great, but he went fifth round and he was at least a starting quarterback for a year. So it's the NFL.
Bad one, but yes.
He was still a starting quarterback. So I mean, Trevor Siemian was a seventh round pick and he's had a really long career. So who knows? You never know with quarterback. You never know with draft picks in general. I can see a scenario where Travis in a couple of years is, you know, shown enough progress where the Jets are like, yeah, maybe he can compete for a starting job. I don't think it's going to be a situation where they just hand the keys over to him, barring an extreme situation where he gets forced in action and plays really well. But I like him as a long-term developmental backup, which is good. You know, you want a cheap backup. You want an affordable backup so that you're not spending $7 million to get a guy like Tyrod Taylor in a building.
It's funny, too, because my biggest pet peeve in scouting and in sports analysis, not my biggest in sports analysis, but one of them, is whenever they're discussing a player and they say his intangibles are off the charts. Like, no. The whole word intangible means you can't measure it. That's what the word means. Pick a new word. That's what the word means. That's why we have words. That's why we have a language. But I'm glad I saw a lot of that with Jordan Travis, because it's like, oh, he has great intangible. And I'm like, okay. But it does seem like everybody in Florida State like swears by that guy.
Yeah.
And you need that, in my opinion, to take it. It'd be one thing. Indifference is okay. Or at least just, oh, he's a pretty good guy. Or he's a really good quarterback. If I hear any rumors of like, yeah, he was kind of a prick. Unless you're Aaron Rodgers, who can be kind of a prick sometimes.
Right.
Yeah, then I steer away from you drafting him. In Florida State, I mean, they're ready to like retire his number and do a bunch of stuff. They love him over there. So that's a good sign, I think.
And it's, I know we just shit on the Vikings and other teams for like doing that with J.J. McCarthy. There's a difference. The Jets didn't draft Jordan Travis in the top 10. Like this.
And trade up for Jordan Travis. And trade up one spot with a team who wasn't going to take McCarthy anyway.
It's fine to be discussing a fifth round quarterback and mentioning like, oh, you know, like one of the positive traits about him is that he is, you know, does have a great work ethic.
But not in a corny way. Like the Bo Nix backpack thing was a corny thing.
Correct.
Like in a real way. Right. That's the difference. And our last bit of draft talk before we move on to some trade talk, the Jets added two new DBs in the late round, who I think are going to be special teams guys primarily, but one of them I think is legit like dime back potential. Quantes Stiggers from the Toronto Argonauts, and no college it's listed as on his Wikipedia page, and then Jalen Key from Alabama. Stiggers is one of the most difficult projections that I've really ever seen.
Of course.
Scouting, because for those of you that don't know, here's the Quantes Stiggers story in a nutshell. Basically, he gets Prop 48. So he can't he didn't get Prop 48, my bad, but he didn't end up going to a D1 school. He goes to Lane College. Do you know where Lane College is,
Justin? I do. Tennessee. I put out a whole thread about his story. I love his story. It's so unique. It's in Tennessee.
Okay, so it's a D2 school, the Lane College Dragons. And then I believe his father passes away and he ends up leaving school. So he's like working a regular job. He's just like a regular dude.
He was working DoorDash. He was working Instacart. Like he was.
But this is a movie. They made a movie, Invincible, that was almost this.
Yeah, his life is a movie.
His mother says try out for fan controlled football, which is a live streamed arena league thing that's 50 yards with Twitch integration where fans call the plays.
Yeah.
I checked, three of the 9 teams are named after crypto.
Yeah.
And the reason they're not playing this year is because a lot of their money was tied up in crypto and the people realized it was worthless and they lost all their money. That's the league this guy goes to play football. Dominates there, gets a deal with the Toronto Argonauts, who are admittedly one of the best Canadian teams year in, year out, it appears to be. Canadians, don't get mad at me. I'm not up on my CFL. It seems generally they're pretty successful, the Argonauts. I love their jersey and their logo, too, that powder blue with the football boat and people are rowing. Great logo. And then from there, he goes to the Shrine Bowl, plays really well, and then he gets drafted. 6 foot, 200 pounds. He had 5 picks in the Canadian League last year. And honestly, I'm impressed by that more than some NFL film, because the Canadian field is wider and it's longer. So it's tougher to play defensive back there, in my opinion. No, not tougher than in the NFL, but just physically, you have to cover more ground.
Right.
If you make a mistake, it's easier to get burned for a 70-yard touchdown. or a 105-yard touchdown, or a Rouge, or whatever the hell it is.
Sure.
Whatever that weird scoring system is over there. I know a Rouge is 1 point if you take a touchback, because so you can lose a game 24-1 if you so choose in Canada.
In theory, you can lose a game like 6-1 in the NFL.
You lose a game 2-1 in football in Canada if you wanted to.
Yeah, you can't do that in the NFL. You're right.
So it's written. That's a tough evaluation, because you have like Canadian guys come over to the league all the time, but you know, very few of them end up becoming A, stars, and B, there's always a question of like, well, how similar is the Canadian game to the pro? Because I can't evaluate fan controlled football when looking at the, I'm not even going to dignify that with a response.
It's a 7-on-7 indoor league. Like it's, and it, the fans are calling the plays.
Johnny Manziel was in it and got benched for poor performance at one
point. There have been two players, by the way, Mike, who have gone from the fan controlled football, like I looked this up, to the NFL. Now, one of them is an asterisk because he was in the NFL before. Then he went to the fan controlled football league, and then he went back to the NFL.
Josh Gordon?
That's Josh Gordon. There's okay. One other player, and that player basically played in every single possible independent league. Do you know who that player is?
I don't know, Jordan Te'amu. He seems like he's there a lot.
That's a good guess. No, it's Kevontae Turpin.
Oh, okay. He's got some other things.
But he played in like every – yeah, he's another situation because he also got kicked out of college for other reasons. Very different story to Quante Stiggers, but yeah.
But looking at Stigger, like the story is always what's going to make Stiggers really like stand out. But I had to go watch some Toronto Argonauts game. You bet your ass I did. And it's tough to project because, again, he's not playing NFL athletes. He's not even playing on an NFL regulation size field.
Yeah.
But you saw ball skills and you saw speed and you saw a really aggressive – I mean, this dude plays like he eats thumbtacks for breakfast, just this real, like, angry physical dude. And then when he went to the Shrine Bowl, which that was his chance. If he stunk there, he was not getting picked and he was done. That was his one chance, and he was great there.
Watched it.
I mean, not only was he good, but I mean, rave reviews. Some said best defensive back there. So there's a limited amount of intel out there on Stiggers as a player. But, man, the highs that I've seen are really encouraging. And if he sticks and he's really good with the Jets, I mean, that's a full-length feature movie.
Yeah. And there's parts of his story you didn't even, like, mention, which is, like, why he was even – under-recruited in the first place. He went to an all-boys academy. He was one of 13 kids, by the way. Which
the best academy, which just looks like a weird charter school.
Yeah. In Atlanta. You know how many kids there were on his varsity team, Mike?
It's going to be like 15 or something really small.
26.
Well, 26, okay.
26, still very small. So very
small. Everybody's playing both ways every game.
Right, and he's in Atlanta, which is a pretty big football hotbed. There's a lot of players that come out of Georgia, specifically Atlanta. So he got completely overlooked. No one is paying attention to him at all. You know, he did receive attention from a few like D2 programs. Obviously, he chose Lane College, and then unfortunately his father passed away. He was out of football for 2 years before he got his opportunity in the FCF, whatever you call it, which was, yeah, like you said, Mike, that was his mom. Like, his mom reached out and got him that opportunity. That wasn't even him. His mom.
He played for a team called Bored Ape Football Club.
Oh, God.
About those okay. Monkey pictures that are worth $40,000 or whatever.
Were they called that then, too? Or did that?
Yes. There was also a team called the Glacier Boys.
Yeah, I like this team. The Steve Aoki one is fun. It's just
Steve Aoki one, which again is owned by Crypto. Like,
right. Isn't it just called like eight Oaky or something like that?
Yeah, this is the most rinky dink operation I've ever seen.
But he was so good in that league that his coaches were like, hey, let's just send his film out to a few CFL teams. The Argonauts reached out, they offered him a tryout. Like, they didn't sign him, they offered him a tryout just to see, hey, can this dude
act? That's all you need. Why can't we do that? Why can't we go to fan controlled football and make it in there?
They offered him the tryout, and then he goes into camp. Not only does he make the team, he earns a starting job and wins Rookie of the Year. So here's a guy.
The whole league, not of the Argonauts, all of Canada.
He was out of football for 2 years, never played college ball, went to a tiny little high school, which is why – also, by the way, he started off as a kicker and punter. That's what he was doing early in his high school career. He was a kicker and punter. He was a small, undersized kicker and punter. Then he had a growth spurt and switched to wide receiver DB, playing for a tiny school – got no recruiting attention because why would he? I mean, you start off as a kicker and punter, he's playing for a small school, and then out of football for 2 years. And so, like, he's a guy who is continuously just, like, everywhere he's gone, it's like, oh, this guy can actually play. What the hell? Like, no one expected him to be able to actually play. So
just a man from nowhere just shows up and picks off five passes.
I cannot think of another story, anything like this in the NFL. And I mentioned his name in the pre-draft show because I threw him out there as a potential Mr. Irrelevant selection because the Jets brought him in for a top 30 visit, as did a few other teams after that Shrine Bowl, that appearance. You know, shout out to the Shrine Bowl, by the way, for bringing him in, giving him that opportunity.
When I've gone, they've always been very nice to me. So yeah. Shout out to Shrine Bowl.
If not for that opportunity, you know, he's probably not on the NFL's radar. Like that allowed him to get on the NFL's radar, and he showed out. And then after that appearance at the Shrine Bowl, teams were like, hey, who is this dude? It's like the Giovanni Manu situation. Although, by the way, him going, what did he go, fourth round. Insane, bro. That's crazy. And they traded up to get him. They gave up a future third. That was the shot at the Jets for doing that. They got a future third from the Lions.
Why were there so many of those picks? I'll give you a fourth for a third.
And the Lions get a future
Justin, third. If I give you $10, can you give me $7?
In a year from now, yeah, I got
you. A year from now, can you give me $7?
Sure, yeah, that's a fair trade. Yeah, it's wild to me. But yeah, it's probably one of the most unique stories that I've ever seen for an NFL prospect. It's awesome. I'd love to be able to talk to him. Maybe we can make that happen. We'll see. But yeah, wild situation. I have no idea what he's going to be at the NFL level. I have not really watched a ton of him at Toronto with the Toronto Argonauts, a professional football team. So I have no idea what to expect. But all I know is that everywhere he's gone in there and been like, oh, this guy probably can't play because look at his story. And then he's absolutely killed it and been like one of the best players there. So, you know, I don't expect that to happen in the NFL. And obviously he joins a very crowded cornerback room. And also I saw Connor Hughes throughout that maybe he could be moved to safety. He would not be surprised if Stiggers gets moved to safety. And I think probably, you know, I don't know about long-term because obviously, you know, we don't know what's going on with DJ Reed. Obviously he's a free agent at the end of the year and they have not re-signed him. I wouldn't be stunned if they ended up letting him walk. That's another conversation for another day, but either way, it gives them extra defensive back depth. As does Jalen Key. You know, I don't really have anything much to say about Jalen Key, Mike. I don't know a ton about
him. Safety, hits hard. He was not an all-the-time starter at Alabama, but, you know, it's Alabama.
Transferred from UAB, if I remember correctly, yep. Right?
Can't cover very well, which is concerning for a safety, and that's
he's
why
gonna he's going to make a home on special teams if he makes the team.
Height, weight, speed gamble, because he's like 6'2", 215. That's big for a defensive back. But looking at Stiggers, too, like the – this tells me just his whole story. They mentioned this in the draft too. How many freaking times could he have just said, you know what? Screw it. I quit. And nobody would have blamed him.
Yeah.
And he kept doing it. And he kept like, I wouldn't have done that. You wouldn't have done that.
No way.
He kept doing that. That tells me in a draft, even late fifth round, you're no guarantee to have anything in the NFL. That tells me this guy is going to work his butt off more than anybody. I mean, this guy has seen things in life that these guys on this, they just haven't been through. Look good. I mean, nobody wants, you know, their father to pass away at an early age or go through depression or anything like that. But this guy's been through some stuff and
right.
It's made him an NFL player, which is remarkable.
And you know, what's crazy. I didn't even mention this part about his story. Like after, so he sat out for 2 years, obviously. And then after he sat out those 2 years, he wanted to try and get back into football. But his first option wasn't the Fan Controlled Football League. He reached out to a bunch of college programs and you know, showed him whatever tape he had, which was, again, very limited
tape from 3 years ago. Or?
Yeah, at a very tiny school. So like colleges were like, no thanks, man. Like,
we're not JV.
Like, they're like, well, we're not interested. And that's when, you know, I imagine he was probably considering giving up at that point, and that's when his mom got him the opportunity with the Fan Controlled Football League. So just an unreal story. Like I cannot imagine. There's not many players in the league.
I will put journalistic things aside. I am so rooting for this guy.
Absolutely, dude. It was just such a heartwarming story. Like whether he went, no matter what team he went to,
the fact he got picked. I mean, he won already,
right? And he's only 22 for a guy who's had this ridiculous, you know, trajectory to the NFL. He's only
34, but like, nope, he's 22.
Right. He's only 22. Like, he's not even old. He's one of the younger players in this Jets draft class. Like, that's crazy.
I'm rooting for him. One player who's been sent away, though, as a result of this draft and all these new additions was John Franklin Myers, traded to the Denver Broncos for a sixth round pick. I'm a little upset to see him go. I mean, we talked about how part of the reason that they couldn't play Will McDonald or Bryce Huffmore was because John Franklin Myers was there. And he played such a unique role with the Jets because he can move around the defensive line. He was a great run stuffer. He blew up run blockers because he was very good at his job. And a better pass rusher than he gets credit for. Like, the sack numbers are never gaudy, but he was always there disrupting, getting his hand up. Very unique player. I know he had some he was maybe the king for a while of roughing the passer penalties on third down. There were a couple of those. I know everybody remembers the famous one in New England when they overturned a pick and then the season kind of went down from there. But all in all, a great player, great developmental success story for Robert Saleh. This is why I believe that Robert Saleh, if nothing else, is a good defensive coach. Not because of him specifically. This dude was a cast-off. This dude got picked in the fourth round in 2018, and I know he had some injuries, but he basically did not play with the Rams, got cut, had to come out of the Jets as like a practice squad dart throw guy, and then when Saleh gets there, makes him a starter, and for 3 years is a pretty high-end starter for his very unique role. Now, I saw this trade coming because they have a whole 2022 draft class to pay. That's the downside of this. They have to pay all those guys, and you got to go pay Hassan Reddick, who they really want to extend for a new contract. Maybe McDonald gets a contract extension at some point if he proves himself, Will McDonald. But you never know, but you at least have to plan for that eventuality and give yourself flexibility. I don't think you will right now, but that's beside the point. They had to get rid of him, in my opinion. Now, you could always restructure and kick the money down the road eventually, but I'm not necessarily, if you could excuse the construction going on above me, apparently, I don't know if you could hear that, but they're apparently lighting off bombs or something like that to tear down a cabinet upstairs. But looking back at this, like, you can push money down the road, but you know, a lot of teams who are contenders don't necessarily do that. Like, Baltimore doesn't really do that. San Francisco doesn't really do that. Philadelphia doesn't really do that. They do it occasionally, but I don't want to become the Saints. I don't want to become the Bills. I don't want to become the Chargers, where you go for it all, doesn't work, and then you got to just take a sledgehammer to the roster and get rid of everybody. Now, Franklin Myers won't do that in itself, but eventually you got to pay the piper on these things. And I'd rather spend a lot of money on Hassan Reddick, who I think even John Franklin Myers would tell you is a better player than him. I would rather spend my money there and keeping all my 22 picks than maybe missing out on one of them because of Franklin Myers. And I know he plays a unique role and he might be difficult to replace originally, but you should have real concerns about your GM if John Franklin Myers is an irreplaceable player, if it's that hard to replace. They're as good and unique as he is, because nobody's not saying he's not good. There's like seven other John Franklin Myers roaming around in the NFL. You could find a guy like that. And I trust Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas, who I know that you've questioned some of their defensive line choices in the offseason, but if they've proven anything with the Jets, because they haven't proven they're necessarily championship caliber coaches or GMs, they've proven they know defensive football, specifically defensive line football. That's their area of expertise. So I'm going to, if they did this with a receiver of this caliber, I doubt it, because I don't trust their ability to necessarily find receivers. Or an offensive line of this caliber, I'd have my concerns because they haven't been able to find offensive linemen of these calibers. Defensive line, they've shown they can get guys in and out and have them be productive. So sucks to see him go. I would have rather they kept him, but you had to go eventually pay some of the other guys besides him. And I hope he crushes it in Denver.
Yeah, I mean, I also hope the same. Yeah, I like you said, an amazing story.
And they love him too, the team. They love him. So
they absolutely love him. This was not an easy decision for the Jets. They definitely aren't happy that they did this. Yeah, I don't like the way that the Jets have handled the defensive line situation this year. And I will say that with the caveat of I trust Robert Saleh with defensive line development. If he's proven anything, specifically just defense in general, defensive linemen, linebackers, court, like all of that, like I trust his decision-making with a lot of that stuff. But I can also objectively sit here and say that the defensive line is now worse than it was a year ago. And that's including bringing in Hassan Reddick. And if you're training for an all-pro pass rusher and your defensive line still got worse, that's not a good thing. Does that mean the defensive line is going to suck next year? Probably not. It's probably still going to be really good. You have Quinnen Williams, you have Hassan Reddick, you have Jermaine Johnson. That's really good. You're probably still going to have a really good defensive line. But I think in totality, the moves that they've made this year, I don't agree with. And I think the John Franklin Myers decision is part of that. For starters, I don't like the Jets trying to spread a narrative that they had to do this. They didn't have to do this. There was no situation that forced them to do this. If anything, it's their own prior mistakes that forced them to do this. Paying a guy like Javon Kinlaw $7 million made this more of a likely situation. They didn't need to pay Javon Kinlaw that money. They could have re-signed Bryce Huff to a smaller deal earlier. They didn't have to trade for Hassan Reddick after they let Bryce Huff walk. They didn't have to do any of that stuff. And also, even after making all of those moves, they did not have to let John Franklin Myers go. In fact, they didn't have to restructure him. What I thought they were going to do if they didn't restructure him was just cut him after this year, because they could have cut him after this year with a pretty minimal dead cap hit. It wouldn't have been crazy. I don't remember the exact number, and it's hard to look it up now that the contract's changed, but it was like less than $5 million. Like, they could have easily cut him after this year and not taken on a ton of dead cap in the process. They didn't do that. They did not do that. They traded him, and in return, they got essentially nothing. It was a salary dump. They gave him away for nothing. And I think John Franklin Myers is worth a lot more than nothing. And it's unfortunate that they were only able to get a 2026 sixth round pick. And it's probably because the move was telegraphed and it was very clear to teams that they wanted to trade him. Of course, the Broncos traded for him and they immediately restructured his contract, which I think that's a very good move for them. And I think he's going to be very good. I think a lot of players or a lot of fans very underrate John Franklin Myers. And I've said this multiple times. I think I've said him and Tyler Conklin are the two most underrated players on the Jets roster. Unfortunately, now it's just Tyler Conklin because JFM is gone. John Franklin Myers.
Who's your defensive replacement?
Michael Carter II sounds – that feels like such an obvious answer. Like, that's almost a cop-out answer. Well,
some things are obvious because they're true. So.
Yeah, he's underrated around the league. I don't think Jets fans underrate him at any point, but I think he's underrated around the league. Yeah, that probably, or Chuck Clark. I'll throw Chuck Clark out there. I think that
– a healthy Chuck Clark.
I think Chuck Clark is underrated by Jets fans. I think he's a very good player. But yeah, John Franklin Myers statistically was a more efficient pass rusher last year than Jermaine Johnson. He had six fewer pressures on significantly fewer pass rush snaps. He was a very, very good run defender. He had 50 total pressures last year with the Jets, which, I mean, you know, we talked a lot about how, you know, great Quentin Jefferson was. That's almost double what Quentin Jefferson had. John Franklin Myers was
50 pressures and 3.5 sacks is kind of crazy, though.
It is, and that's the thing. He created a lot of sacks for other players. He had 12 QB hits. He led the team in QB hits, John Franklin Myers. Nobody on the team had more than that. Very – like, I feel like fans just don't remember how good he was last year, probably because the sack numbers aren't high and it's less easy to – it's harder to calculate it. But he's a really good player who was very, very productive both as a pass rusher and a run defender. And I know you said, oh, you know, he can be replaced. By who? Who on the current Jets roster is replacing him? Right now, it's Michael Clemens. It's Will McDonald is going to get an uptick in snaps, although Clemens is the only one who really fills that role. Maybe we'll talk about a couple of UDFAs in a second who might be able to do that. But it's
also really banking, I think, on Jermaine to just be a true, like, edge-setting run, like, two-way. I mean, he's always been good at that, but I think they're really banking on Jermaine's run defense because that was part of the appeal with JFM, too, is the run defense.
Yeah, and I have no issues with Jermaine Johnson. I think he's gonna be. I think he's going to be able to fill that role, and he already did last year. I think Jermaine Johnson's a very good player. You know, I mean, Pro Bowl might be a little bit much, but you know, you don't have a player on the roster that can fill that role at all. Michael Clemens was not good last year. Like, look, call a spade a spade. Michael Clemens was not good last year. I thought he had an impressive rookie season, and then every single part of his game declined in his second year. Statistically, on the like film, every part of his game declined last year.
And Justin, can I take a fan question really quick?
Yeah, from Brian
Hamill, with adding the contracts on the upcoming draft, how would you be able to keep him this year?
Jets already had $4 million in cap space going into the draft, and that includes all of the draft contracts that they had to re-sign, right? So that includes, or not re-sign, all the contracts allotted to players coming into the draft. They still had $4 million in cap space. They were not over the cap. Like that, they were not like backs against the wall. We need to create cap space right now. So they did not have to do that. Again, you could have restructured him. There are other contracts you could restructure, or you could have just not made moves. But like, again, if you bring back Quentin Jefferson and don't pay double to bring in Javon Kinlaw, then you probably don't have to cut John. You probably don't have to trade John Franklin Myers because you just saved like $4 million doing that. And you double your current cap space. You know, I don't think they have many huge, like I imagine they're probably going to shop around bargain bin, like wide receiver. Maybe they bring in a Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Maybe they bring in another safety. Maybe they bring back Connor McGovern, right? Like there's a few moves they might make. And, you know, you always want to have a few million dollars in cap space going into the year, but there are absolutely other things they could have done. Also could extend DJ Reed, could extend Tyler Conklin. There's so many ways that the Jets can currently create cap space. They have so much financial flexibility right now. Like they were not the Chargers where their backs were against the wall. We have to get rid of everyone. They're not in that situation. And even if they made like one of them, or like even if they restructured another contract, they're still not in that situation. Like they're so far from being in that situation that for a team that's trying to be all in and win this season, it just doesn't make sense to get rid of a player who is very, very good. And again, the totality of the situation, you basically swapped out Bryce Huff and John Franklin Myers for Haason Reddick. Haason Reddick's an awesome player. I would rather have the combination of John Franklin Myers and Bryce Huff than Haason Reddick. I think the totality of what they've done, they're just the worst. Their defensive line is worse. And again, I say that with the caveat of I trust Robert Saleh, and I trust that the defensive line is still going to be good this year. But I can objectively look at the situation and be like, I love most of what the Jets have done this offseason. I've really not liked the way that they've handled the defensive line. It goes back to the Kinlaw contract as well. Like, I thought that was a really bad deal when I called it out at the time. Is that going to make or break the season? No, but I think it's a bad move, and I think the totality of it, the defensive line is worse. And I think because of those poor decisions that they made on the defensive line, they had to get rid of or they didn't have to, but they made the decision to get rid of a really good player. And again, by the way, not to blow up his spot here, I think John Franklin Myers agrees with me, because I put out a tweet that was like, you know, the Jets didn't have to do this. They did this because they didn't think he was worth it. He liked that tweet, right? Like, I don't think that – I think that's – the understanding to him, at least, is – we didn't have to do this. We're saying we had to do this. And that's what you see Jets beat report. Like, I know Connor Hughes is saying that too. Like, you know, that's what they're being told. The Jets are, you know, feeding them saying, hey, we had to do this. They didn't have to do it. Like, financially, they did not have to do it. They decided
they had to do it if they didn't want to just keep pushing dead cap in the future. Because the
extend Tyler Compton, extend DJ Reed. You're not pushing dead cap in the future doing that.
But they settle on the JFM contract. Well,
let's say money do it. Like, again, there's so many ways they could have created cap space. And again, there are other mistakes that they made ate into that cap space. Also, like, the Jets also have the most dead cap of any team in the NFL. So,
plus they did pick McDonald too. And I guess this is another. I know that they're no way similar type of players, but
and that's another thing where I'm just like, don't get rid of a good player to justify a pick. I won't say a bad pick because we don't know if it's a bad pick. To justify a questionable pick is the nicest way I can put the Will McDonald draft pick. And they did it with Bryce Huff, and now they did it with John Franklin Myers, and I'm not happy about that.
I only feel bad for him, though, because he made the Super Bowl, actually, in his first year with the Rams, and then he had to eat so much crap on these horrible Jets teams. Now they get Aaron Rodgers, and they're good again, and they send him to Denver, who's supposed to be awful next year.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like if he went to a contender, maybe he doesn't like that tweet. He's not as upset. It's like finally it's going to be my defense, go to the playoffs, and then, okay, we're going to rebuild.
It's a business. I'm sure he understands. And I also understand, obviously, it's nothing personal. And I don't think the Jets are, like, incompetent for making this decision.
No.
To them, they decided that he was a replaceable enough player and that what he was being paid was not worth keeping him around. It's the same decision that they didn't make with Carl Lawson last year, where they could have done it with Carl Lawson. Like, they could have just cut him free. But they were like, we think restructuring him and keeping him around at this value is worth it because we like him as a player. They did the opposite with JFM. They said it's not
worth it. Learning from Lawson, because that didn't work out.
Except JFM is a much better player.
But yeah.
And Carl, like, no offense to Carl Lawson. Again, I love Carl Lawson. Unfortunately, we never saw him healthy. But JFM has been healthy and it has been a durable player and has been a very productive player. So I just, you know, they made the decision that they thought he's not worth it. And so we're going to make this move, but they didn't have to do it. They decided that he wasn't worth it. And I disagree with that decision. I don't think he's as replaceable as a lot of fans seem to think. I don't think there's a single player in the roster right now that could replace him.
Let's move on to our last segment of the show. Pretty long show, but pretty good one. We're going to talk about some undrafted free agents. Now the Jets brought in a ton of them. And I got to give the Jets credit because they brought in a lot of guys that if I look back at my big board, I'm like, how the hell did X, Y, and Z go undrafted? The Jets brought in a couple of those guys.
Yeah.
Some of the better undrafted ones on the market. Like, good example, there were only two players in my top 125 picks, or players rather, that did not get drafted. One of them I'm going to go talk about is my like undrafted free agent to watch here. One of them was Gabriel Murphy, who went to UCLA. He was next to Laiatulatu, who is now on the Colts. He signed with the Vikings as an undrafted free agent. And his twin brother, Grayson, I think, signed somewhere else. But Gabriel, I think, was the better one. And then the other one, who was the only top 100 player that I ranked that did not get picked, was Leonard Taylor, mm-hmm. who was a defensive tackle for Miami. I am not making this – I would not lead you astray, Jet Press listeners. Go and look up mock drafts from literally up until like a couple weeks left in the regular season, and Leonard Taylor was in the first round or in the top 50 at least. This dude is a tremendous athlete for the defensive tackle spot. He's quick. I like his power. Go watch him. Miami played, was it Wisconsin or Nebraska or one of them? I think it was a Big Ten school. I'm blanking on one of them, but there was one particular game this year that I remember watching where he just completely ate everybody alive. I'm like, wow, this guy's a stud. Clemson. It was Clemson.
Yeah.
and he just destroyed Clemson. Like, he might be one, the main reason they won that game was Leonard Taylor. I thought he would be like a late third, early fourth round pick, because he actually got Will McDonald-ed, for lack of a better word, because Will McDonald was playing like three tech when he's 240 pounds. Leonard Taylor is like just over 300. He's more like a quick interior, like Quinnen Williams, like a quick interior pass rusher guy. They had him playing nose tackle. Imagine if you put Quinnen Williams at nose tackle. That didn't make any sense.
They did at Alabama a little bit. He was playing nose tackle at Alabama.
Yeah, you know where he was better? Three-tech.
Absolutely. Tech. Absolutely.
That's why Jet took him there. Yep. But they just bungled this guy. And even with that, the fall was crazy to me because he tested okay. His workouts looked okay. Like, it wasn't like Cameron Kitchens, his teammate, who had like a two-point whatever RAS and just bombed his workouts. Or Marcus Roseme Jackson, who he had as like a fifth-round pick, and then he ran a 4.840 at 195. That didn't happen. It befuddles me that he got picked. If they took him with the pick that, like, obviously I love the Braylon Allen pick. If they took him in that range, I would have been like, oh, great value pick. They got him undrafted. I think he'd be a really good 53-man roster guy. Like, he could be a perfect backup, I feel like.
Yeah, it was stunning that he went undrafted. I think it's not a stretch to say that he was the most high-profile undrafted free agent. So
him and Brendan Rice, when he was falling, I'm like, how has nobody picked these two yet? Right.
And he went seventh round. But yeah, it's shocking that he went undrafted. Shout out to the Jets. And I think there's something to it. You know, whereas Robert Saleh has kind of garnered a reputation as being a D-line guru around the league. And that's, you know, it's why the Jets were able to bring in the three most notable. I would say the three most notable undrafted players that the Jets brought in are all defensive linemen. That's Leonard Taylor, Eric Watts, who I'm about to talk about in a second, from UConn, and Braden McGregor from Michigan. Like, they brought in – McGregor was a starting defensive end for the national champion Michigan Wolverines. Got good size, good athletic traits, and he went undrafted and the Jets brought him in.
Well, that is where we part ways on good athletic traits. But Braden McGregor is like – if you wanted film to, like, here's how you're supposed to play defensive end, but, like, you're more athletic than me, so you can do it better, that would be Braden McGregor. But technically, like, he's got a really diverse pass rush.
Yeah, he does.
Y'all said he just doesn't have the get-off that a lot of the other guys do.
Sure. I mean, Leonard Taylor has that get-off. I mean, Leonard Taylor.
More than enough of that.
Leonard Taylor was a five-star recruit, one of the most highly touted prospects going into college. And, you know, he never really put it all together at Miami, obviously. And there was some stuff about, like, oh, you know, I don't want to throw around the word character concerns, but, like, effort was called into question at points. Like, that's something that I've seen out there as a negative with him. And so it's going to be a situation where the Jets just need to kind of unlock that potential with him. And if they could tap into it, and especially just playing in more three tech, there was a specific stat I saw about Leonard Taylor, like his, I think it was his win rate or pressure rate from playing three tech versus when he was playing nose tackle. He was absurdly efficient when he was playing three tech, but when he was playing nose tackle, his numbers declined. I'll find it in a sec, but, you know, they play, here it is. His pass rush win rate as a three tech was 28.6%. I'm not a big, like, win rate guy. I don't think it's like a great statistic, but that's crazy. The issue, he only played 28 pass rush snaps of three tech all year. So, like, obviously part of it is, like, you know, is sample size there, but, like, he's so clearly much better as a three tech. And you see that a lot in college where, you know, if you're 300 pounds, you might be the biggest guy in your D-line room. They're going to play with nose. Like, if that's unfortunately how it happens at college. And unfortunately,
I mean, they're not thinking about, let's get Leonard Taylor ready for the pros, you know.
Exactly. They're thinking, how could he help our team right now? And if he's a bigger guy, that's where he's going to be. So he is like 300 pounds. So it makes sense they played him there. But in the NFL, he is absolutely so much better in that Quinnen Williams role, in that Javon Kinlaw role as a pass rushing three tech. And I think he has a very, 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 very high upside. Like, much, much higher upside than most undrafted guys. Dude, Mike, tell me how Giovanni Manu gets drafted in the fourth round and Leonard Taylor goes undrafted. Like, that doesn't
I guess they're thinking it's Jordan Mailata. Jordan Mailata is why he got picked that, because they're like, physically, he's got everything. We just got to teach him how to play football.
And physically, Leonard Taylor has a lot. If you're going for upside, why not get a guy who at least is playing football at a high level in college? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Very Canadian heavy draft. We got Manu and Quantes.
True. That's true. Shout out Canada. But yeah, I think Leonard Taylor has a really good shot to make the team, as does Braden McGregor. But the guy that I'm going to talk about, because, you know, I just spent a few minutes kind of ranting about the John Frankenmeyer's move and how I did not like it. Well, look, one guy who I think might be able to fill that role, has the potential to fill that role, and who I might even like at least in terms of upside, more than Michael Clemens, is Eric Watts out of UConn, another guy, another defensive lineman that the Jets signed, 6'5", almost 6'6", 274 pounds. He got into UConn and he was only 225 pounds. So he really had a big growth spurt while he was at UConn. And you could see that he's still kind of filling out his body in the way that he plays. He's very unrefined, but in terms of physical and athletic traits, the ceiling is there. And he's also very like high motor, competitive guy. I'm very surprised that he
4.67 40-yard dash, by the way.
Right. That's
277.
What was his
RA? If somebody ran that fast at us, we'd crap our pants. Like, that's the level of athlete he is.
How was his RAS only 8.24? Oh, because his shuttle time was bad and his bench was actually bad. That's kind of surprising me. But vertical was in the 92nd percentile. 40-yard dash was in the 90th percentile. Like, I mean, he's an exceptional athlete for his size. And I think he's only just scratching the surface of what he's capable of. He had a really good 2022 at UConn, had 7 sacks, 10 tackles for loss, but college does that weird thing where they count sacks as a tackle for loss, so don't read too much into that. But he had 7 sacks, then only 2 sacks this past year. So the production at least declined a little bit, and that's probably why he went undrafted. But
And it's at UConn too, so it's not
right, – and at UConn, so it's not like a huge high-profile school. But I just – you know, I can't believe there wasn't a team out there that was like, hey, let's take a chance on this guy as a day three guy, because I figured he'd go fifth round maybe, like before the JFM trade happened. Because like you said, Mike, it was kind of – it wasn't like a shocking thing that he was traded, because JFM put out that, like, you know, a cryptic tweet, whatever you want to call it, where it was like, oh, you know, I'll bounce back. And people were like, whoa, what do you mean? And so I put out a tweet. I was like, hey, you know, if JFM is traded, here are some guys on day two or day three that I might look at as potential, you know, potential replacement for John Frankenmeyer in that tweener archetype role. And Eric Watts was like my favorite of those guys. I wouldn't have been shocked if he went like third, fourth round. Like,
I would have been shocked.
You would have been shocked. Caden Wallace went third round, and you had him being Mr. Irrelevant in our mock. So who knows, man?
I mean, I had Watts as like, we're going to have him on my big board.
I think fifth, sixth round was his sweet spot, was what most people expect him to be.
I had Watts 228. So a little better than, I had him getting drafted.
Yeah. I'm surprised he went undrafted. I think in terms of, you know, what I think his upside is and how much, you know, I really want to see what Robert Saleh can do with him and how he can develop it. Because I think he has a lot more pass rush upside than Michael Clemens for sure. And look, I don't know if he's going to, you know, have a role immediately, but I could absolutely see him making a team. And in a couple of years, I would not be surprised if he is a key player in this defensive line rotation.
I do think he has a leg up on Leonard Taylor. Leonard Taylor is a better player, but I feel like they need a guy like him more.
And I think he also got like double the guaranteed money that Taylor did too.
Yes. You also got to be concerned that he's going to be 24 in October. So sure. Older player, never really like dominated at UConn. Like those are the concerns. That's why he went on draft.
I think he's more of a late bloomer though. Like that's kind of the thing. Whereas, you know, he didn't really grow into his frame until later, and he's still very unrefined. You know, I think
if all things are even, you're going to take the 21-year-old guy who plays like that over the 24-year-old guy.
Sure. Like I was surprised. Leonard Taylor only got like 110K guaranteed, I think, which is very low. Like that's incredibly low for an undrafted. Like not incredibly low, but for like a high profile undrafted. I think Jason Brownlee got double that last year, more than double that. So I don't know.
Maybe he'll be half as good as Jason Brownlee. Who knows? And won't that be a player?
All right, man. I'm going to end on that note, man.
Thank you guys for tuning into the 2024 NFL Draft Recap. We had a really fun time sharing that with you guys. As always, you can find us on all the podcast platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts, we are there. And we're on YouTube at The Jet Press. That's where you can subscribe and like the stream. Like those things really help. Justin, sign us off.
I will, as a quick disclaimer, I will not be here for the next 2 weeks. I'm going.
That is true. Yes, you are a world traveler.
I'm a world traveler. Last year, I don't know, for those who have been listening since the start, or at least since last May, I went on a trip as a wire under my desk just shook free. I went on a trip to Panama last year. I'm going to Malaysia this year. Very excited about that. Need the time off. I'm very excited for it. So I'll be gone for 2 weeks. We have not officially determined how we plan to attack, you know, if Mike's going to do a stream by himself or we're going to bring on someone else. We'll see. But yeah, I guess stay tuned for that. And if, you know, if we do it, it should be next Wednesday at 3 p.m. But I won't be here. So I will be back in 2-3 weeks, whatever it is. And hopefully no craziness happens in Jets land, you know, before I come back. The schedule will be out, whatever. I don't care about the schedule release. That doesn't do it for me.
But I already know the opponents. It's just the order.
The schedule is so one of the most overhyped things. Like I never care about it. It does not do anything for me. But anyway, yeah, so I'll see you guys. I'll be back here in a few weeks. But until then, thank you all for joining us on the show today. You can follow Mike on Twitter at @ByMikeLuciano. Follow me on Twitter at @JustinTFree. Follow the Jet Press at the Jet Press. Download the Jet Press podcast wherever you get podcasts. Check us out on YouTube and TikTok. Subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you all for listening to Jet Press podcast. I have been Justin Freed. That has been Mike Luciano. We'll see you guys next time.
You'll see me next week, possibly. For Justin, it'll be a couple weeks. So wish him well on his world travels, and we'll see you guys soon.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.